Welcome to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650 with myself, Brendan Batchelor, and Randeep Janda. This is your official home of the Vancouver Canucks, and it's been a busy week for the Vancouver Canucks. It's been an even busier week for Randeep Janda. You've been doing a lot of different things. You've been all over the place. I'm sure you're quite exhausted here as we speak on Friday afternoon. Tell everybody listening what your week has looked like.
Yeah, I finally got some sleep after a while, but very excited and honored, actually, to be invited to Vaisakhi on the Hill, which is, the important day in our Punjabi and Sikh calendar. Parliamentarians were celebrating. So flew out to Ottawa after Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi, celebrated that on Parliament Hill, which was an honor. I was able to speak there as well, but got back, Batch. And the next night was the Canucks for Kids Fun Telethon, which is a huge and important night here in Vancouver, all across the province, as funds raised that night benefit multiple communities. I was hosting that with Elliot Friedman as the Arizona Coyotes took on Vancouver, and I'm happy to say, you might have seen this already.
Yeah.
$800,000, the second highest total ever outside of the 2010-2011 season, if I'm not mistaken. So that's an amazing thing, and thank you to everybody that donated and was able to be so generous. It's obviously a lot, a tough time for a lot of folks, but the fact that they're able to, even if it was a little bit of money, to donate to such an important cause. So busy, but a very, very enjoyable and fulfilling experience, especially with the telethon. That was an awesome night.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it's a great night every year, and it's great to see the Canucks for Kids Fund and the tremendous work they do is recognized by so many people around our province donating. And just because the telethon's over doesn't mean you can't donate to the Canucks for Kids Fund. It's an incredibly important cause to all of us and to the organization, and it helps a lot of people in BC as well.
So while all of that's been going on, and I had a great time doing that, Elliot Friedman did the telethon the next morning. He was on a plane and he was reporting on the Arizona Coyotes situation, which we'll get into a little bit later on. But I haven't been able to call a game with you in a little bit now, but that will end at some point here. Against Vancouver Calgary, I'll be back on the call. So it's been a while. You and Brett have done a great job.
Yeah, you'll be back on Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi, on Saturday. But the Vancouver Canucks, in an interesting scenario, and maybe a little bit more interesting than a lot of people would have liked at this point in the season, going into a Saturday night game against the Edmonton Oilers. And I sent out a tweet about this earlier in the week. But both of these teams, as we are talking right now on Friday afternoon, control their own destiny in terms of winning the Pacific Division. Now, that will change if the Edmonton Oilers don't get a win over the Arizona Coyotes in the Friday night game. And, if you're listening on Saturday, we recorded this podcast before that game was played. But assuming that Edmonton wins that game, whoever wins the game between these two teams on Saturday night controls their own fate in the Pacific Division. Now, that doesn't mean that whoever wins the game will win the division. In fact, I think especially in the case of the Oilers, it's far from a guarantee that if they win that game, they'll win the division, because they've got a lot more games and a lot fewer days left the rest of the way in the regular season. But with some of the struggles the Canucks have had lately, with their inability to get that second point, and they fall in overtime against Arizona the other night, this sets up as important a regular season game as I think you can have without a playoff spot literally being on the line on Saturday night in Edmonton.
Yeah, the dog days of the season, so to speak, are kind of gone here, because you're playing meaningful games again, where the Canucks, to their credit, had the lead in the Western Conference for, 70-plus days, and now they don't have that. And the Pacific Division lead is up in threat here as well. But a couple of those things. You mentioned the schedule. The Oilers have Arizona on Friday night. After that, a back-to-back with Vancouver. After that, the Sharks. After that, Arizona yet again. And then the Avalanche to end off the season. Two of those games are really, strong opposition. The other three, Batch. Arizona, we know they can win. They're a competitive team. They might be playing angry. But you get them twice on the schedule, I'm willing to take my chances, and San Jose is one of the worst teams we've ever seen. So for the Canucks, when you look at that schedule, you don't look at the Edmonton Oilers schedule, but we do. We look at both teams' schedule. That Saturday game is really important, because that is a soft schedule other than the Vancouver and Colorado games.
And that Colorado game could be soft anyway, because if the Avalanche have everything clinched by the time they get to that game, they could be resting guys like MacKinnon and Makar. So, it comes down to Saturday at the very least. The Oilers, I would say, give themselves a chance to win the division if they beat the Canucks. and they don't have a realistic chance to win the division if they don't beat the Canucks, because Vancouver's got Calgary, which, you know, the Flames have been up and down this year, but on paper, that's a game that the Canucks should win. And then they finish against Winnipeg, and, you know, I have the same questions around that Winnipeg game as I do around the Edmonton-Colorado game. Does it mean anything? From a Canucks perspective, the way that I think fans should mentally approach this game is, if you win this game in Edmonton on Saturday night, you're going to win the Pacific Division. It would, you know, there would have to be a large sequence of things go against you for you to lose it if you can get the 2 points in Edmonton, and especially if you can get them in regulation time.
No doubt. And you got to look at it from that perspective of, if you do your job, you'll be fine. And the Canucks have been looking at it that way, in that room, in that locker room, to say, we got to focus on ourselves. We don't care who we're playing against. You hear that from JT Miller a lot, even when you try to get a little bit of intel of how they're playing the opposition. JT Miller's scrums are very, hey, we don't look at the other side so much. We know what they can do, but we need to play our game. So I like that. But if you lose on Saturday night, you have to start watching the opposition a little bit more. In batch, they still currently have a 71.1% chance of finishing first in their division, which is a strong number. It's not as high as it was maybe a week ago, but you got to make sure that you are, you know, focusing on that Saturday matchup. And two things have to go on here. One is, of course, looking at the opposition in front of you. The other thing is, you know, from a defensive perspective, I haven't disliked the Canucks game. I think a lot of the questions are coming on the offensive side of the puck. It's on the power play. Are you getting contributions? Or do you have the right blend in the forward group? From a defensive perspective, they've been able to limit what they're doing pretty well. And you get a Thatcher Demko back at some point, of course, in the immediate future, that makes you even more confident. But the thing is, offensively, this is where they need to work. And that's why a team like Edmonton, where if they're going, and if they start to kind of go back and forth, a little bit of a track meet, which Edmonton likes to play, even though they're much better defensively than they were at the beginning of the year, you know, that's a challenge. You got to be able to break down that team defensively, which is not necessarily a huge challenge, but do you have the offense in your lineup to go shot for shot with them? No, you don't. You have to play their identity. So that's why defensively, I like what they've been doing, as the Canucks have been doing, but Batch, the questions are coming on the offensive side of things.
Well, and yeah, from a defensive side of things, it's all well and good to say you're playing well defensively, but can you limit or eliminate offensive production from guys like McDavid and Draisaitl? We know the answer to that. The answer is no. Those guys will get their points. They will contribute in some way or another, although I think JT Miller has played some good matchup minutes against those guys. But at the same time, that's the other fascinating part about this matchup, is these two teams haven't played since really early in the season. Three of their four matchups came in the first few weeks, and we know how that went. The Canucks took all three of them and dominated at times against the Oilers, but this is a very different Edmonton team that's found its game and has gone from not just being so far out of the playoff picture that people were talking about them not even making the postseason potentially, to now legitimately being back in the conversation to win the division. And you cannot overcome that big of a gap if you're not a very, very good team.
Let's be honest. They were an absolute clown show at the beginning of the year. That's what they were. That's what they were. Those first couple of games, and the Canucks showed that it wasn't a fluke. They continued to play well throughout the season, really up until now, but at the very least until the All-Star break. So the Canucks in the first two games was not a fluke. They showed that. But we also have to acknowledge that the Edmonton Oilers were broken to start off the year. Their system that they tried to change wasn't working. And now, with Chris Knobloch, they're a very different team. They've got Connor McDavid going again. Remember, this was a guy that was not even scoring that much to his standard. Now he's talking about 100 assists. So just imagine if he started playing like this at the beginning of the year. One thing to watch, though, is does Connor McDavid play in this game? He's not going to be playing, by the looks of it, at the time of recording, against the Coyotes. He's dealing with some sort of lower body injury. The expectation is, against Vancouver, if you're resting on Friday night, means you're extra fresh for Saturday. You don't rush him back. If he's not playing, obviously, that is a great situation for Vancouver. But I do want to warn you, he didn't play against Vegas, and they mopped the floor with the Vegas Golden Knights. So it's anytime McDavid's not on the ice, it's a great thing. But you cannot take Leon Draisaitl and those guys for granted, because this is a very different team than the Vancouver Canucks played in October, for sure.
And it's the second half of a back-to-back for the Oilers as well, but I don't think you could rest on those laurels either, because we saw, hey, it was a second half of a back-to-back for Arizona.
Yep.
And they found a way to beat Vancouver. And I think you talk about the line combinations in terms of generating offense, and I thought it was really interesting to see Rick Tocchet change his lines at Thursday's practice. And I like what he's doing here, because I think on paper, this is him reverting to the way this lineup looked for most of the year when it was having a lot of success. So, if you didn't see the lines from Thursday's practice, Hoglander was still on a line with Pettersson, but it was Ilya Mikheyev on their other wing. JT Miller was centering a line with Pew Suter, and Niels Omon was skating on the wing, but Brock Besser had a maintenance day. So the assumption is that Omon was a placeholder and that that line would be Suter, Miller, Besser. Then we had Joshua and Garland back to where they spent most of the year on the third line, except with Elias Lindholm in the middle instead of Teddy Bluger, and then the fourth line was Phil DiGiuseppe, Teddy Bluger, and Sam Lafferty, with Vasily Podkolzin being the extra forward, likely with Niels Omon, assuming Brock Besser can play on Saturday night. And I've seen a lot of talk in the market of, why is he still switching up the lines? You know, you want to get some consistency late in the season, and you know, you don't want your lines to be in the blender. You want to know what you're going into the playoffs with. My response to that is they haven't been playing well enough offensively. And you know, to keep the lines together just for the sake of keeping them together when you're struggling to produce doesn't make a lot of sense. To me, reverting to something that looks a lot like what they did for most of this season makes a ton of sense. And I'll be interested to see, first of all, if that's how they skate on Saturday night against Edmonton. And second of all, if they can get back to being the team that produced a ton offensively like they did early in the year. And then potentially what these lines look like in terms of a matchup situation. And they won't have the last change in Edmonton, but you can see the vision from Rick Tocchet. Joshua Lindholm Garland could be deployed as a shutdown line in the playoffs against top players on the other team. You could do the same with Miller, Suter, and Besser, and it might free up that Pettersson line for some more favorable matchups.
And you mentioned that Joshua Lindholm Garland line. That's the one that I really, really like in theory, because Elias Lindholm, prior to being shut down for a few games, we were talking about good defense, right? But he wasn't right. We could see that he didn't have that. Since he came back, and especially in that last game against Arizona, even though it was a loss, there was just a determination about his game. There was a physicality to his game. He was playing an aggressive style. You put that with Dakota Joshua, you put that with Connor Garland, I really like that line. That's essentially, you're getting a Teddy Bluger with more offensive pop. So even though this line was able to put up some points when Bluger was on it, I think it just opens the door for Lindholm to provide that offense if he is right. Nobody's 100%, you know, right at this point of the season, but if he's a little bit better or a lot better than he was the last time we saw him prior to the being shut down, I think there's a real potential for this line. And you talked about the shutdown element. Even if there's not offense, even if he, you know, has issues with an injury still, the bare minimum, Batch, is that he's going to provide you with some good defense, which gives you that option of the shutdown line. And we could see that as soon as Saturday against the Edmonton Oilers, where they've, even when McDavid's playing, they've got, you know, two lines, potentially three, that can pose some problems. Where, all right, Lindholm, Joshua, Garland, show us what you got. Could be a bit of a rehearsal for what we will see in the playoffs.
And the opponent point that you bring up there, I think, is very crucial, because I asked Rick Tocchet about this week when he was being questioned in one of his media scrums about deployment and the lines and what he's looking for and what he wants to try and get out of the way he deploys his lines. And I asked him how much of that is going to depend on who you play in the first round and what the matchup is. And he openly admitted that they will do different things with their lines depending on who they face. You know, if they're playing a team that has more depth, then maybe you roll the lines like this. If you're playing a team that you don't feel like their third and fourth line can do much against you, then maybe you load up your top six or go to the lotto line, for example, or something like that. And I think we'll still see that situationally in games regardless. If they're trailing and they need a goal, they're going to throw their best players out on the ice together to try and get that for them. But I think that's one thing that people don't realize when they look at the lines and they just say, oh, why is he juggling them? Why is he changing them? There are times where Rick Tocchet has specifically changed his lines to game plan against the team that he's playing, and you know he's going to do that when it's not just a one-off game, one of 82, but it's one of seven in a series where you're going to play the same team over and over again.
Well, let me give you a real-life example on this, right? The highest odds right now for the Vancouver Canucks in the first round are in the Nashville Predators at this point. The first line for them is Philip Forsberg, Ryan O'Reilly, Gustav Nyquist. Second line, Colton Sissons, Mark Jankowski, Jason Zucker. I don't mind Dakota Joshua, Connor Garland, and Elias Lindholm having second-line duty in a series against Nashville because you could load up with line one. All right, Ryan O'Reilly versus JT Miller. Maybe you see the lotto line. Maybe you see an element of we're going to go shot for shot and see what you can do because the third and fourth line, third line is not bad with my guy Tommy Novak, but outside of that, the fourth line, I'm not seeing Michael McCarron play in the playoffs very much. That's not going to happen. So is that a series where you maybe load up with a slightly different look, or you're happy with JT Miller and Brock Besser going head-to-head with Ryan O'Reilly and you get a soft matchup against the third line for Elias Pettersson? So you could work it both ways. Both options are there where you might go conventional lineup right now that we're seeing, or if you really want to try something, you know, fun and potentially you're looking to hit that home run, there may be an opportunity for the lotto line. But against other teams like LA that have three centers deep that can pose some problems, Vegas, if that happens, you're probably going to need Elias Lindholm playing down the middle alongside JT Miller and Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, and you know, I think one of the interesting things to talk about in this scenario is how it's going to be in terms of who they're going to face, but also in terms of deployment. And you bring up the soft matchup for the Pettersson line, and that's how I see things playing out, assuming that these guys are all going to be on different lines, that Pettersson and Miller are both down the middle. Because, you know, as much as we referred to Joshua Bluger and Garland most of the year as the third line, they were being deployed like a second line for a lot of that time, and they were being used in a matchup role. And you know, with a guy that can win faceoffs, that can kill penalties, that has the defensive profile that Elias Lindholm does, even if he doesn't produce like we talked about, he's going to want to use that line as a shutdown line, which means it is entirely possible that at 5-on-5, the Lindholm line plays more than the Pettersson line. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't get Pettersson more minutes or find other situations to get him out there, and you know he's going to be a factor on special teams, in particular the power play. But I almost look at it as, say it's Nashville, yeah, you probably go Miller line against the O'Reilly line. But then do you look at going the Joshua Lindholm line against the second line? And, you know, I look at the second and third lines of Nashville and they're almost interchangeable for me. Like, you know, the Zucker, Sissons, Jankowski line to me isn't a true second line. Then the Beauvillier, Novak, Evangelista line is a high end or a better than average third line in the league. So I almost look at the Predators like they have a first line, two third lines, and a fourth line. So, you know, in that mindset, if you keep those guys on separate lines, if you deploy the lines that way, then somebody's getting a softer matchup, and the likelihood that that's Pettersson, I think, is high. And with the way that his game has been trending slowly in the right direction here over the last few games, that is the kind of matchup. And you and I have talked on this show about the importance of Pettersson driving play and winning his matchup, especially in a series against someone like Nashville. That could make or break how you're able to do in the series. Is can that Pettersson line capitalize on maybe playing some weaker opposition?
And I'm glad you brought up a couple of those lines, because the Tommy Novak, Evangelista, and Anthony Beauvillier, remember him? That line is dangerous in transition. And if I'm Vancouver, I want Dakota Joshua's line against that line, because what are they really good at? They're good at A, third man high, Elias Lindholm is excellent on that, helping out the defenseman, but also keeping possession where, you want to attack off the rush? Well, that's not going to happen because the forecheck, the puck retrievals in the offensive zone are so good. So how do you negate that transition attack? You lean on them. So for me, I look at that, and technically they're both third lines, but the way Nashville has used that line as well is, hey, you're our second best offensive line. And the same could be said about the Canucks' third line, where they're responsible defensively. But, Batch, we talked about it, right? Their ability to combine for points has been something that's been really strong this year. And that was with Teddy Bluger. With Elias Lindholm, if he can find that right spot, the right health, I think that ceiling's just that much higher.
So it's going to be interesting to see, first of all, what the lines look like on Saturday against the Oilers, and then how that plays into the first round matchup. And we're there, basically, Randeep. A week from now, we will be doing this show, and we will know who they're facing in the first round, and we will be able to set up the series and preview things more in depth. So I don't want us to go too deep on Nashville, because A, we might be having the same conversation next week. B, it might be irrelevant because they might be playing Vegas or LA in the first round.
Odds are high right now, but you're right. It's not locked in, but we're just so excited about the playoffs. I can't help myself. I'm sorry.
Now turning to a less exciting story that is the big news around the NHL. And this is a Canucks podcast. We're going to talk mostly about the Vancouver Canucks, but the Canucks lost to the Arizona Coyotes the other night. And the Arizona Coyotes that beat Vancouver in overtime were the first team in more than 30 years that essentially found out that they're going to be relocating on the day of a game and then had to go out and play. And you can credit Arizona for the way that they played and the ability they had to have some success against the Canucks. But this is the storyline and the number one storyline around the league. The Arizona Coyotes look to be destined for Salt Lake City and will likely be playing in Utah next year.
Not a huge surprise. I think we talked about it even on this podcast previously, where, you know, this is a team that I think you mentioned it, saying, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if this news came out in the offseason. But the fact that this came out in April and right after that video being released of their plans for the future after the land auction,
it's just another line in the long list of debacles for this organization.
It's not that we're surprised that this is going to happen, because it probably should have happened a while ago. Let's be honest. It's the way it's going down, where the ownership group and the team comes out and says, hey, we've got this great grand plan for the future. And essentially 2 or 3 days later, we find out that it's happening. And then they're moving to Salt Lake City, and that's going to happen. On the player side of things, that's where I feel for everybody, players and staff. Because if you're a player, you probably moved your family to a certain, you know, part of the country. Team wasn't going to be good, but at least you're building towards something. And you're saying, this is where we want to live. Some guys might have had offers from other markets, but Arizona and that area is somewhere that people like to go to live and lead their lives.
Yeah.
And the same goes for the staff. At least the players are making six figures and they're making multi-millions. There's team staff there that's going to have to see, A, do they uproot themselves? Do they even get that opportunity? Or B, what do they do with their life? So, you know, I think from a fan perspective, and I've been recently, as last week on Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi, I said it was an embarrassment to have less than 5,000 people in an arena, but that's the business side of it. It's been something that the NHL and the ownership group has allowed to happen here. But on a personal level, it does suck, because we've all been there in some way or form, whether it's the Vancouver Grizzlies leaving Vancouver, whether it was the original iteration of the Winnipeg Jets. Losing a fan, you know, a fan base from a league, it's an emotional experience. It's not great. So I can understand and relate to a lot of those players and fans in that market. But unfortunately, Batch, it was something that they kind of let it stick around for way too long rather than giving it another chance. This was the inevitable.
Yeah, it's been a black mark on the league. And really, you know, you even look, as you allude to, about how things played out over the last few days, where they announced this new arena they want to build and win the land auction. And then I believe it was the mayor of Scottsdale came out and said, we do not welcome this project and we do not have the water resources to provide to an arena. And then the next day they're going to Utah. And, you know, we can get into this a little bit because we're going to hear from Connor Garland. I had a chance to catch up with him after practice on Thursday. And of course, Garland came up in that Coyotes organization, you know, played in their AHL team and then broke into the NHL and was coached by Rick Tocchet there, and you know, had a large part of his NHL experience, and his first 400 games, most of them were played for the Arizona Coyotes. I had a chance to catch up with him after practice and get his thoughts on the news that they're likely moving to Salt Lake City.
Yeah, looks like it's going to happen. It's disappointing. I don't think people realize how good of people are in that building, and equipment managers, training staff. You know, Dave Zanobi and Stan Wilson are probably the two best. You know, some of the two best in the world at what they do, and it's just disappointing. And then obviously, you know, players, you know, Clayton Keller was my best man, and, you know, just talking to him last night about what it means, and that's a big move, you know, and it's going to have to happen quick, and a lot goes into that. You know, you got to find a house. You know, he has a house he just built, and you know, it's a lot of life-changing stuff. So, yeah, it's disappointing. It's a good city. Fans deserve better. It's, you know, I won't probably go into too much on what happened, but, I mean, it's definitely disappointing.
How would you describe it as a hockey market? And obviously they haven't had a lot of successful teams there over the years, but you came through that organization. Like, what would you say about it?
Yeah, it's disappointing. We were a team on the rise, and then they kind of broke it down, and you can actually see now it's coming back on the rise. They got a lot of good young players. You know, that's disappointing for that fan base to have to sit through those last 3 years and not get rewarded for that. But, you know, when we were good, you know, the fans came, you know, they supported. When I go back, I still see a lot of them, and you know, they're at the Mullet, even though it's a tiny rink, and support, and it's a good hockey market if they got the right people there in charge.
Is it as simple as having an arena at the right spot in town, being in Scottsdale, something like that, to get more engagement?
Yeah, I would assume. Well, it's not even just Scottsdale. There's other cities. Obviously Glendale's probably a little too far. Again, I'm a hockey player. I'm not an expert on anything. But I think Glendale's too far. Phoenix, Scottsdale, Mesa. There's some areas where they could put a rink. But it's just tough. You probably have to have the right people there to be able to pull that off. But it's a beautiful city, great place to live. Like I said, it's just disappointing they're not going to have a team.
From a player's perspective, is that the thing you guys will miss the most, whether you play there or whether you're a visiting player, that it is such a nice market to go to?
No, I'll miss seeing my friends. Michael Grabner was one of my good friends, playing with him and his family. And when we go back there, I always go to their house and spend the day with his three kids. So I'll have to visit him in the summer. That was a free trip to go see them. And I got a lot of friends there. That you meet just by, like I said, I'm a routine person. Going to restaurants, going to coffee shops, they end up seeing the same people over again. And it's just, it's tough that, that part's out of your life.
There's Vancouver Canuck forward and former Arizona Coyote Connor Garland. And he doesn't do a great job of hiding his disdain for the way things have been managed there. And I would imagine that he doesn't mention anybody by name, but you hear him a couple of times say, if you get the right people in charge there, it can work. That is a not so subtle shot, I would say, to Alex Murillo and the ownership group that have really done a poor job with that team in that market.
For sure. And that's the current situation, but it's been a conveyor belt of ownership and conveyor belt of upper management that hasn't hit the mark. And you can blame city officials all you want, but it's not the point. You have to have the right leadership in charge. And Batch, one of the things, and Connor mentioned there as well, but Eddie Alack is a friend of mine, talked to him often, and one of the things he mentioned, who still lives in that area, Scottsdale, and he was talking about, hey, when you're judging the team, judge the team, but the fans here, if they're given a chance to support a really good team or a competitive team, they'll go out there, just build them or an arena that is accessible to everybody there, that is in a spot that makes sense. So I do feel for the fans, because Connor references that as well. The fans are good fans. It's just a matter of, can you find the project and the right ownership that is going to actually be able to appeal to these fans and give them what they want? So, that's the tough thing. We'll see what happens in the future, because there's always the opportunity to circle back to the Phoenix area. It is a big market. But now, even with Salt Lake City off the board, you've got other teams, other cities. Houston is still in the mix. Apparently, Tillman Fertitta, the owner of the Houston Rockets, saying, how about us over here? There's other markets like Atlanta that want that third opportunity. So we'll see about Arizona. It's unfortunate for the fan base, but I thought Connor made some great points of speaking from the heart, but also telling us what the situation is there. Not necessarily directly telling us, but hinting at the fact that, hey, you got to get the right people there. Otherwise, it may never work.
Yeah, and I think you brought it up earlier, but the key thing that you need to talk about here is the people's whose lives are going to be affected. So the staff that are going to lose their jobs because of the relocation, and the fans that are going to lose a team to cheer for. And, it's easy to say, okay, yeah, maybe the NHL goes back to Arizona in a few years, but nothing's guaranteed. And for those fans to have to sit on the sidelines and wait and hope for another team to come, we know what that was like for people in Winnipeg for all the years that they didn't have a team. And it's just really disappointing to see, because as much as people like to dunk on the Coyotes and the organization and the hockey market there, I think, much like we've seen in Vegas, if you gave that market a team worth cheering for in an arena, a state-of-the-art arena in a good spot in town, it's a big enough market that you could create a good fan base there. And it's why Gary Bettman and the NHL have been so committed to keeping a team there and trying to make it work. It's just unfortunate that time has run out.
And on that front, though, I mentioned Houston, Atlanta. Arizona's selling point was it's one of the fastest growing markets. Well, Salt Lake City is that. That's why they're going there. Houston is one of the biggest cities in the United States. Atlanta, there's more competition than Phoenix originally had. So about circling back, sometimes it doesn't happen because the competition changes. And I think Houston and Atlanta will have something to say about that in the future as well, which is potentially unfortunate for Arizona fans, but that's the business world.
And quickly on Salt Lake City, I've heard a lot of people talking this week about why Salt Lake City. That doesn't make a ton of sense. You could go back to Quebec. You know, Houston's been thrown out there. This, to me, is less about the market, although I think you have to be going to a market that is going to be able to embrace NHL hockey. Salt Lake City, to me, meets that criteria. This is more about the owner and the ownership group. Ryan Smith, the owner of the Utah Jazz, is heavily motivated to own a hockey team, and he is the kind of owner that the NHL wants in the fold. So, you know, this is not to say anything negative about Salt Lake City as a market, because, again, I think it can work as a hockey market. I think it's got a chance to do really well. It's got a long history of minor league hockey, which is also what we saw Vegas had before they got an NHL team, and things have worked out pretty well there, in large part because the team's been pretty good on the ice. But you've got a billionaire owner who is motivated to bring the team to that market. There's talk of building a brand new state-of-the-art arena that both the Jazz and the NHL team could play in. And their temporary solution is better than Arizona's temporary solution. And look, the arena in Salt Lake City, and I've been there because the Canucks played a couple of preseason games against the LA Kings there a few years back. It is not well suited for hockey the way it is set up, but it is much better than Mullet Arena. Like, you can fit 10,000 fans at least. I don't, you know the numbers off the top of my head.
Ryan Smith mentioned about 13.5 to 14. That might be on the high end, but still, it's a lot more than Mullet Arena.
And it doesn't look pretty, right? Like, there's bleachers that have to be pushed back behind one of the nets so that there's literally a wall right behind the net, and there aren't fans that can sit right off the glass on one end. It's kind of like Barclays Center, although Barclays Center was better than the arena in Salt Lake City. But it's still not Mullet Arena. It's still not 4,500 fans. It's still close to an NHL attendance. It's something that resembles what they're able to offer in Winnipeg. Again, it's not a perfect arena, but they're working to build it, and they've got a billionaire that is motivated, and they've got the Olympics coming to Salt Lake City, so there's more opportunity for public-private partnership in terms of building that arena. So, again, like, you look out in the face of it, and you're like, why would you go to Salt Lake City rather than a more traditional hockey market that might be able to embrace it? There's a lot of economic reasons to do it, on top of the fact that it's one of the fastest-growing metropolitan areas in all of the U.S.
That's a big part of it. They're also a very corporate, you know, headquarters in that city. They're very engaged from a corporate sense in that city. So
lots of opportunities for advertising.
Absolutely. And the NHL cares about that. Any franchise has to be healthy. You have to have local support there. And that's been the challenge for anybody in Phoenix, where you've got the Arizona Cardinals there. You've got, you know, the Phoenix Suns there. You've got a bunch of collegiate programs that are successful on their own. And you kind of get lost in the fold if you're the Coyotes. In Salt Lake City, this is a very engaged group of investors that are ready to go. The other thing is, you have a proof of concept with the Utah Jazz. This is, you know, going back to a 32 Thoughts interview that Ryan Smith did last year with Elliot and Jeff, he talked about how they had 60,000 junior Jazz basketball players. When you talk about growth of the game, having young people involved through your team, the Utah Jazz probably do it better than most NBA franchises. That's what the proof of concept you want when you are taking a franchise somewhere to say, hey, this owner, do they get it or do they not get it? Are they going to lean in when we're trying to build out this franchise? That's been a huge problem in Arizona, where you don't know what to expect from the owners there. Here, they've already got one in terms of one of the big four leagues. It's successful there. So that is big. And of course, when you're willing to drop $1.2 billion, that helps, but you also want to make sure you have the right person in charge. Ryan Smith seems like it, and they have a proof of concept with the Utah Jazz and what they've been able to do there.
And the way the Jazz have been run as an organization is smart, right? Like, they re-signed a couple of their big-name players right after Ryan Smith became the owner, but then they've kind of undergone a rebuild here, and they're doing their due diligence to try and build an organization that can be sustainable for years to come, and that's something that's never really happened in Arizona. It's been stop-start. We heard Connor Garland allude to it in the interview that, you know, they'll try to rebuild, but then maybe they'll you know, struggle to do it properly or decide that they can't afford the payroll or whatever it might be, and suddenly they're shipping guys out of town and doing it again. You think Ryan Smith, as an owner, would lead an organization, based on the way he's led the Utah Jazz, that has more opportunity for sustained success on the ice, and success on the ice leads to all the other things we're talking about, like corporate dollars coming in, like growth of the game, like sustainability in a market, which has been so hard to find in Arizona.
It's a very different sport, I understand that, but there's two statistics that we have to keep an eye on when it comes to Salt Lake City. Every single Utah Jazz game has 18,206 fans, despite rebuilding. and they have a consecutive sellout streak of 292 games, despite rebuilding.
Wow.
That tells you something, where that population is engaged in sports. So if you're Ryan Smith and you've had to retool on the fly, you'd have to, you know, trade a Donovan Mitchell and others out of your market, yet your fans still show up, I bet you Gary Bettman and other NHL owners are saying, how do we get a piece of that?
So we'll see what happens with the Arizona Coyotes and their future. It looks like they're headed to Utah. Nothing official yet, but I imagine that could be confirmed even in the coming days. Like, there was a report that came out that said it could be announced as soon as April 18th. So we might know the future of that organization and that franchise within the next week. All right, we are way over time for a break, but when we get back, we're going to get into the mailbag, answer some of your questions, and we'll do the rose ceremony as well. It's all still to come on In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Brendan Batchelor and Randeep Janda with you. If you're listening on the radio and you missed any part of the show, well, you're in luck, because it lives as a podcast on the Canucks Central podcast feed. If you subscribe to Canucks Central, you get the daily show every day of the week with Satyar Shah and Dan Riccio. You get every postgame show with Sat and Bick Nizar, and you get In the Booth with us once a week as well. All right, Randeep, let's head to the mailbag. And we got a bunch of different questions with the Canucks ahead of their big matchup on Saturday night against the Edmonton Oilers. And let's start with Nyken, who writes in and asks, who gets the nod, DeSmith or Shelovs? And
I believe it was who the bleep gets the nod, but that's fine. That's fine, too.
It was
a little bit more passion.
We can say it. It was said, who the hell gets
the nod?
Yeah,
there we go. Okay, yeah.
And then I replied with question marks because there was no context provided. And then Nyken wrote back and said, DeSmith or Shelovs. I think we have to add a third name to this, and that third name is Thatcher Demko. And again, we're recording on Friday afternoon, but Demko, when speaking after practice on Thursday, said the plan had always been the Calgary game. That's what he's been working towards, but also made sure to say he feels good. He feels like his recovery is going well, and he wouldn't commit one way or another as to whether he could start the Saturday game in Edmonton.
Intriguing wrinkle there, and he was also referencing that it's been a very aggressive program that he's, in a lot of ways, been really kind of putting on the training staff and saying, hey, they've done a great job, and I've been demanding a lot of them. But when it comes to the question from Nyken, I'm going Casey DeSmith here. Casey DeSmith, you give him a rest. Arthur Shelovs plays a couple of games with Shelovs as well. There's a couple of goals that you probably want back. He's starting to, you know, kind of come down back to ground level a little bit. In that Vegas game, the goals weren't maybe great, but his bounce back was excellent. Casey DeSmith's your backup for this year and the playoffs. You need to make sure that he ends up getting these games. This is the big game, potentially, you know, of the season, really, when it comes down to your division lead. DeSmith, when you look at the large sample size, has been your second-best goaltender this season. So, for me, it's Casey DeSmith, because this is a game of importance. He's got the resume. He's got the experience. And I think you need him in net. Thatcher Demko, at this point, you don't rush people back. I would go DeSmith again.
It'll be interesting to see what happens on Saturday night, though. I agree. I think it's got to be DeSmith. I know people have liked Shelovs, and look, he's done well in a small sample size, and I think has shown that he at least deserves the opportunity to come in and compete for the backup job at training camp next year. And it remains to be seen what they would do if Demko, you know, God forbid, were to sustain another injury and have to miss more time. But you need to get Casey DeSmith back in. You need to get him confident. You need to get him rolling before the playoffs in case he has to play. So that's the way I would go as well. Another question from Big Shot on the West Coast. So it must be me writing in to our own show.
Oh, look at that. Could be anybody in media these days.
No kidding. Big Shot asks, why aren't the Canucks just using the lotto line? And we spoke a lot about the line combinations in the opening segment. And I think that is really what it comes down to is – the lotto line together adds a lot, but what does it take away from your overall depth and the rest of your lineup?
The sample size this year, even though it was a short one, it was a really good one. But remember those final maybe one or two games? They started to kind of drop off a little bit. That was a situation where you're saying, okay, maybe time to go back to what you know, spreading out the love a little bit. In a playoff series, late in the season, you have to be a legit Stanley Cup contender, the very least, to win a round or two, you have to have three solid lines. One line does not get it done because, sure, you might win that one matchup batch, but what happens when they go off the ice? You might be camping out in your entire zone.
You can't play them the whole game.
You can't play them. This is not a league where you can play forwards 30 minutes a game. If they could, guess what? Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid would be out there for 30 minutes. Sometimes they get close around 24, 25. But in a playoff series, when you're taking a beating, you can't do that. So having JT down the middle, having Elias down the middle, having Elias down the middle is important for two reasons. The matchups, but a lot of those guys, all three of those guys, love playing down the middle. When you're a center, you see more of the puck. That's important. Are you going to get the best version out of themselves in a seven-game series? And three lines, you need to have that. So use it as a super weapon. But if you come out with the super weapon right off the bat, what's happening? You've let everybody know that this is your preferred way to go, and they can match up around you. In game, I get it. But I think heading into the playoffs, I don't want to see the lotto line unless it's a break, you know, glass if need type of situation.
And we will see it in those situations.
For sure, when you're chasing a game.
Absolutely. Or even if you're salting a game away and you feel like you need an extra goal, then it wouldn't surprise me at all. We see Rick Tocchet shorten his bench in the third period all the time. So he could certainly go to the lotto line at times. Another question in from The Rocket, who asks, what matters to you more, making the playoffs or winning the division? And I know my answer to this, and I think it's pretty easy, but I'll let you go first.
Yeah, this is, are we asking this question at the beginning of the season or now? Because I feel like the conversation...
I think the answer is still the same, though, isn't it?
Yeah, this year especially?
Yeah.
Making the playoffs.
Yeah.
If you look at from 1-8 in the Western Conference, every team is capable of beating the other team. So making the playoffs is the right answer. Sure, for Vancouver, will you have a bad taste in your mouth if you don't win the division because you've led it all year long? Of course, but what's more important, you know, what matters to you more is getting in and having faith in your team to beat whoever they face. The Canucks have beaten Edmonton. They've beaten LA a little bit, but LA's had their number.
Yeah.
Vegas, they've been able to beat as well, played some of their better games against Vegas of late especially, and Nashville, they've had a very strong stretch against them. So get in and you win, that's the most important thing. Winning the division, it's a nice cherry on top, let's put it that way.
Yeah, if this question was phrased as winning the division or home ice advantage, then maybe I would go winning the division, although I think home ice advantage is very important, and certainly they've basically guaranteed it, if not officially guaranteed it. I believe they have now for the first round. They know they're going to start game one and game two at Rogers Arena. Winning the division's great. You want to do it. Especially in the situation where you've led most of the year, it would be disappointing not to. But if you're giving me the option of, winning the division or making the playoffs, you just got to get in. You got to get in.
Especially this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we've seen in past years too, like the Florida Panthers just got in last year. And what happened? They went to the Stanley Cup final. So get in, give yourself a shot. That's the more important thing. And then after that, you look at things like home ice advantage and winning the division.
On that note, though, The Rocket coming in with that question, like, timing is everything in terms of the playoffs. Are you backing into the playoffs? Are you, sprinting into the playoffs? Teams that are fighting for their lives, like the Florida Panthers last year, they were sprinting into it. And, teams like Boston and Toronto weren't ready for that. You don't want to be backing into the playoffs because that's something that maybe your division lead goes. You want to make sure that you're still against Edmonton, you're playing your best hockey. Against Calgary, whoever's playing in that game, You're maybe smacking them around a little bit to say, hey, we're still the top dogs. And against Winnipeg, if you rest people, that's great. But I think these next two games are important just to set the tone and ease fears.
You mentioned resting guys. That ties in nicely to our next question from Brian. Will the Canucks rest any guys for a game or two before the playoffs, or is it important to keep the systems in check and play the games out with everyone? That's part one of two questions from Brian, so we'll take this one first. They're only going to rest players, I think, if they're in a situation where they don't have anything to play for in that last game against Winnipeg. And we don't officially know when they're going to start game one of the playoffs yet. There have been some rumblings about potential dates for it, but nothing confirmed as of yet. I think it's probably fair to say that it would be highly unlikely for them to start on the Saturday because they play on the Thursday. But just in case that is an option, you'd love to be able to keep a few guys at home in Vancouver and not send them to Winnipeg, but I don't think you do that unless you've got the division locked up by then.
Yeah, if you're the players and if you're Rick Tocchet, I don't know if Rick Tocchet speaks to the team this way behind closed doors, but boys, you went on Saturday night. Some of you are gonna rest on Thursday night. Like, there's an incentive there, right? If you take care of business against Edmonton, it just takes the foot off the gas a little bit, where I don't maybe necessarily think they'll rest guys against Calgary. It's a home game.
It's the last home game, fan appreciation, all of that.
All of that, but and you can also just put a stamp on your season to be like, all right, done. Hey, Winnipeg, let's get some of the young guys out. Let's get some of the guys that haven't maybe played so much in the last few weeks. But it all comes down to that Saturday game for me. You don't want Edmonton to walk away from that game having the confidence, and then you have to wait for them to make a mistake in order to win the division. You take care of yourself on Saturday. But, Batch, if it's Thursday against Winnipeg and it's all to play for, they're all making that trip there because you want to win the division. You still want that home ice advantage, especially if you end up running into the Edmonton Oilers in the second round. That's a potential matchup. If you're first in the division or the second in the division, you want to make sure you have that.
Last question comes in from our buddy Tim James with a pro wrestling themed question, which is always going to pique our interest.
Of course.
If Zach Hyman is the Gunther of the Oilers, how do the Canucks stop him? So I'm going to...
Is this a visual reference to how Zach Hyman looks in Gunther?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering because okay. I don't see the comparisons otherwise. For those that don't know, Gunther, a longtime intercontinental champion in WWE. And we're
from Austria.
Get, yep. From Austria. We're not going to get into WWE talk too much. But generally speaking, was a dominant champion during his title reign. Was, you know, big, physical, imposing. That's not what I think of when I think of Zach Hyman. But do they look alike? Maybe that's what he's hinting at.
Yeah,
here.
I can
I'm not
see
sure.
That. They've kind of got the buzz cut. Very clean cut. I like it. I like the comparison. Tim is a big wrestling guy, so I see it. I actually buy it. But how do you stop him? So who's his biggest rival? I'm just trying to...
It was Sami Zayn recently. He beat him at WrestleMania.
Sami Zayn. All right.
Who's like the plucky underdog. Like it was... They kind of did like the Rocky storyline where Gunther was playing Ivan Drago and Sami Zayn was Rocky.
I got the perfect example then. It's Connor Garland. They play a very abrasive style. Gets under your skin. Plucky underdog. Does that not sound like Connor Garland?
It does.
I think that's going to be what it is. You've got the larger than life kind of disciplinarian, so to speak, in Gunther / Zach Hyman, who worked his way up to the top and is now a 50 goal scorer. And Connor Garland, surprising everybody. 5'8", doesn't matter. That's the one I'm going with.
All right, this is a good time to transition into the rose ceremony. We do it every single week.
I got into that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's all good. I'll let you go and give your rose first here, Randy.
My rose goes to Vancouver Canucks fans. Anybody that donated and supported the Canucks for Kids Fund Telethon, that was an amazing night. $800,000 raised for very important programs all across the province. A number of beneficiaries and charities that benefit from the Canucks for Kids Fund. So my rose going to Canucks fans. You are the most generous fans in the league. Thank you.
Absolutely. I cannot agree more. And again, you can still donate to the Canucks for Kids Fund. You don't have to stop donating just because the telethon is over. So we encourage you to contribute if you are able. I'm going to go with JT Miller, who for my rose is now, I believe, up to a 9-game point streak. And again, through stretches in the season where the team has struggled or been up and down, or whether, you know, other top players have been getting criticized, like Elias Pettersson, for example. Quinn Hughes hasn't had very many dips in his game, but he's had a few. Miller's been Mr. Consistent, and at the right time of the year, contributing, reached the 100-point plateau this past week. Shout-outs as well to Brock Besser for hitting 40 goals, for Connor Garland and his hugely important 400th career NHL game and his 100th career goal. And Quinn Hughes continues to break records every game. But for Miller to hit that 100-point barrier after getting close a couple years ago and to be so consistent and producing on a nightly basis, he is getting my rose this week.
And on top of that, a 200-plus hit guy as well, plays the game the right way, very physically demanding. He's been an absolute monster for this team.
All right, that does it for this week's show. Thank you for listening to In the Booth. If you missed any part of the program, you can download the podcast on the Canucks Central podcast feed. And when we talk next week, we will be previewing round one of the Stanley Cup playoffs for the Vancouver Canucks. We'll talk to you then right here on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.